Hello, everybody. My name is Tom Oliver. I'm co-hosting this year's Enlightened Business Summit. This is the fourth Enlightened Business Summit and the best ever. We have a truly global, diverse, and exciting lineup like never before. It is my honor to introduce you now to someone I've had the pleasure to work with. I hold in very, very high regard, and it's always such a highly interesting conversation whenever we're getting together, because I never cease to learn, and he never ceases to amaze me. Welcome, Richard Huntington. Welcome, Richard.
Hi, Tom.
Let me say just a few words about Richard. He's been the director of strategy at Saatchi & Saatchi Group, one of the biggest and one of the largest and leading creative agencies in the world, since January 2008. Richard is charged with delivering strategic solutions, effective creative ideas, and senior counsel to clients. The website is saatchi.com. That's SAATCHI.com. And I'm particularly fond of Richard's personal blog, which is called AdLiterate. I'm going to spell this out for you, AdLiterate.com, AdLiterate.com. Be sure to check that one out. And today's topic is a matter of trust, how brands and businesses can act in ways that are more trustworthy. Welcome, Richard. That's obviously a hot-button topic for everyone, almost. How would you, maybe to start things off, how would you define trustworthy in today's age?
Well, I mean, I think it is a hot topic, isn't it? And the reason that I've been spending a little bit of time thinking about this is that, you know, many of the brands and businesses that we work with now see trust and trust building as an essential part of their commercial and social and cultural success. But I think one of the great frustrations about trust is that we all want it in the world of business, but none of us really knows about how to go about getting it. What we've been thinking about really is are the building blocks that help establish trust, or specifically, I think, stopping craving trust from our customers and from other stakeholders, and rather acting in ways that are trustworthy, are worthy of people's trust. And I know that sounds like it's a semantic difference, but so many brands and businesses operate in a world that they of simply seeking trust, rather than saying to themselves, in what ways could we act to be more deserving of people's trust? And that's really where I've been doing most of the thinking and talking. And critically, I think, you know, and this was in so many ways kicked off by conversations with you, Tom, saying...
Thank you.
There's a very I would call self-referential and myopic conversation going on about trust in the business world, which largely involves endless rankings of most trusted and least trusted brands and businesses, and a desperate attempt to understand best practice simply by looking to the world of brand and business. And it seemed to me that there were people and organizations who were trust building on a daily basis, and had it down to a rather fine art, and that the world of brand and business never really engaged them. And I would absolutely include peacemakers, people experienced in conflict resolution at one end of the spectrum. And at the other end of the spectrum, I'd suggest our mothers are also brilliant people to talk to about trust building. In Britain, they are, if you rank who are the people most trusted, clearly people who work for advertising agencies are really low down on that list, but mums are right at the top. And so we spent a lot of time talking to to people across that spectrum, people doing a lot of work in empathy building. A fantastic guy called Paul Zak is doing a lot of work on the role that oxytocin plays, perhaps as a moral molecule. So we've been gathering this all together, but simply to the premise, I know there's a slightly rambling intro, Tom, but simply to the premise that that we could do well in the world of business to look outside our own universe, because there's some brilliant examples and principles at play if you talk to people more broadly about building trust.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I thought it was a beautiful introduction, and you touched on so many topics at the same time, including the mothers.
Sorry.
No, brilliant, brilliant. And it's true that you and I had a lot of conversations when building up some of the branches of the World Peace Foundation brand, and obviously conversations about trust and peace building, peacemaking, conflict resolution, prevention. And when we talk about trust, why not talk a little bit about some of the, I would call, rock star brands like Google and Apple? And we had Jess Frampton in last week, who just published the best global brands with Interbrand, and we were talking about what makes Google and Apple tick and why they consistently place at the top of the best global brands. Now, aligning this with trust, what do you think people can learn or maybe not learn from Google and Apple, how they have handled trust, and how does that serve as kind of a guideline, positive or negative, for other brands or businesses to follow?
Yeah, you mentioned my blog right at the beginning of this conversation, and actually I wrote a rather cheeky post a little while ago, which kind of said if you can get away with not paying any tax, perhaps that proves the strength of your brand these days, because nobody's walking away from Apple, Amazon, and Google, despite the fact they seem to be doing all sorts of unhelpful things within our societies. To answer your question, I would prefer to say, because this is my point really, if I go and think, well, how does Apple establish trust and how does Google establish trust? I end up trying to, I don't know, I end up trying to piece together from example some best practice that actually may or may not be true. What I've been trying to do, or we've been trying to do, is to say, well, if I go to somewhere else, like conflict resolution, or maybe the way that people build trust in political parties, or the way that you and I behave when we meet a stranger, then what can I understand about trust building in those situations I can bring back and apply to the business world? So an example I would suggest is that lots of people talk about transparency as being, and honesty being, absolutely central to trust, and any number of people will say, you know, if you want to trust, just make your corporate governance or your supply chain transparent. And you know, I don't doubt that that helps a little bit. But our exploration has suggested that honesty and transparency might be a little bit overrated, because actually you and I don't want to know the ins and outs of each other's lives. We want to be able to believe in each other, to feel that another human being is going to be trustworthy. So I talk a lot about the need for there to be a shared or common agenda between people, or between people and businesses. And I think Apple's a good example of a brand which may not feel like it's the most transparent organization, but whose agenda seems to be very closely aligned with its customers, to the point where Apple can do some stuff which would be a problem for many other organizations and brands. The most recent example, well, being the upgrade to iOS 7 for people using portable devices. Well, you know, that's not been particularly smooth. I think that, that for many brands, that might have been cause for consumers to look at their renewal date on their mobile cell phone contract and think about moving on. But the people we spoke to had a profound sense, almost like, well, I believe Apple know what they're doing and they'll get them in the end, so I'm going to stick with them. And so what I'm saying, this is just an example of, I find it more helpful to go away. This is relatively recent stuff, but to go away to somewhere else, find a powerful principle like shared agendas. So, you know, you, when we meet a stranger for the first time, we desperately try to establish some sort of common ground or shared agenda. It's a absolutely human characteristic, and even in conflict resolution, we may accept that we have different agendas, but we agree to disagree on an outcome simply because we have a shared agenda around ending a period of conflict. So that's what I've been doing is going away, looking at these principles, coming back and saying, that's kind of interesting in Apple's case. Or in Google's case, I think one of the profound drivers of trust is, and it sounds really, really boring, but it's sheer dependability. I learned a lot talking to people like yourself, talking to the fantastic guy called Jonathan Powell, who was the UK government's chief negotiator with the IRA during the Northern Ireland peace process. And he talks a lot about, you know, I never tried to get the IRA to like me. I simply tried to prove that I was a man of my word and that the UK government would deliver on its agreements. And it taught me a lot about the thing in peace building, I guess, which is that agreements are nothing. Agreements are, they're fantastic and they get the headlines, but there's so many peace processes that have failed despite, you know, the handshake and the signature because the implementation went wrong, that people didn't deliver on what they said they were going to do. And so if I think about Google, I think a lot about sheer dependability. I also think that's true of, you know, Amazon just does exactly what you expect it to do faultlessly time and time again. I think it's an underrated characteristic in business at the moment, dependability. We're so enamored of the desire to surprise and delight our customers that we sometimes, I think, as marketers, particularly brand builders, we take our eye off the doing exactly what you... We have a phrase in the UK, it does exactly what it says on the tin. and that's what I'm talking about. So that's how I tend to look
at brands. Just like some others. Actually, so in a way, I mean, you mentioned great points, and I just want to reiterate them real quick. You have to look at shared or common agendas between people and businesses, which is great, and obviously shared dependability, which is the last phrase you coined. Do you think that some of the brands successfully rely on, how could we say that, icons or people or spokespeople who are supposed to establish trust between the brand and the consumer or the people, so that in a way they rely on certain figures or to build their brand or help establish that trust. Yes. Do you think that can be done successfully, and do you think brands... Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I would make a real distinction there between brand spokespeople, which I think, you know, celebrity and brand spokespeople can be a powerful approach to marketing, but not necessarily the process of trust building, although more informal celebrity endorsement that we see these days largely through social media can be incredibly helpful. But what I want to go to is you know, the idea that people want to do business with people, and even when you get to the size of Facebook, people want a sense that they're doing business with somebody, and I'd say that the buck stops somewhere. So I think still in the UK, there is a sense that if something really went wrong with your Virgin Atlantic flight, you could phone up Richard Branson and he would take personal responsibility. And I think, you know, trust is not actually built between people and organizations in many ways. It's built between people and people, and sometimes those people run organizations. And I'm really interested in the power of the individual or the leader within an organization to establish high levels of trust with consumers and purchasers, customers.
It's funny you mentioned Richard and Virgin. I do remember seeing a tweet back and forth between Richard and an angry customer, and wasn't even a customer of the current set of Richard's companies, but it was a branch of Virgin that had been sold, but it would still reflect negatively on the Virgin brand. So Richard even took that to heart and got back to the customer, who wasn't an actual customer then, at least not of Richard's Virgin brand anymore. But he promised to still sort it out. And I guess that's something that you allude to right here, which is great, obviously, if you have a brand like Virgin and you have a figurehead so perfectly representing that brand who feels as if he is very approachable, even though he might not be in traditional terms. But through social media, it's, you know, it's just a tweet away, in a way, right?
Yeah, and I think the truth was that was always the case with founder-run organizations and entrepreneurial organizations, and that's intensified with social media. But, I mean, it's in that's a kind of an eternal sense. And when we talk about things feeling corporate, I think it's probably usually when things don't feel humane or at a human scale. I do think that some of the internet monolith brands of the moment need to watch out about their humanity. And going back to the point about shared agenda, whether it's really aligned with customers, I think, you know, there's a big potential issue for brands like Facebook. We're starting to see, not amongst the sort of Twitterati, but amongst, you know, the research, the qualitative and quantitative research we did with mums, a starting to sense a feeling that they're, you know, I depend on Facebook, good, but they're just in it for the money and they'll do anything to make a buck out of me. So I do think that sense of, you know, trust building is a very human endeavor, and when we act in a corporate manner, when there's another phrase we have in the UK, the computer says no. But when the computer says no, or the script for the person on the call center is unbending and inhumane, that's when we have real problems establishing human connection.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. I completely agree. And you just touched on social media and obviously a global increased connectivity, globalization. Do you think social media and that increased connectivity puts more pressure on brands to act in ways that are more trustworthy? Because simply information travels instantly across the globe. Consumers are more aware and more connected than ever before. So do you think one of the consequences is that there is more pressure on the brands to act in ways that are more trustworthy?
Tom, without a doubt. Without a doubt, that and that is terribly good news, but I would like to suggest that, you know, it's just made this a pressing issue rather than created an issue. I mean, all that's happened is that people can see inside our organizations and businesses, and they can connect with other people about our organizations and businesses. I mean, I remember a story years ago, right at the beginning of the peer-to-peer, what we might call the peer-to-peer revolution, about a woman who, in a provincial supermarket in Britain, was stopped from breastfeeding by a manager. Now, 20 years ago, that would have gone nowhere apart from the customer services department.
Today, that has
the potential impact corporate reputation. But what I would want to suggest that you know, trust is a fashionable idea, partly because of social media and partly because of crisis and scandal. So, if you're a financial services organization, you're very interested in trust right now because it walked out the door about five
Absolutely.
Years ago.
Yeah.
So yes, there are things that are happening right now that make it more pressing. But I think, you know, this journey has taught me that trust and trust building is it's essentially the way any of us, you know, humanity builds societies, builds economies. Our ability to trust each other is at the heart of all exchange. It's possibly one of the reasons that we've done relatively well as a species. And therefore, I still want to however fashionable it is to talk about social media, I still want to root trust in it's a damn good thing to be doing, full stop. It's just come into the headlights, rather, over the last few years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Why do you think brands and businesses have to rethink the ways in which they act? Why do you think, do you think trust has always been as important, or do you think it's become even more important now?
No, I think it's always been important. We've just not, I don't feel we've always had an eye in the right, on the right things. So an example, and it's to this point about, act in ways that show you to be trustworthy as opposed to go out and seek trust from people. And if you're doing that, one of the things that I got to understand a lot better was the idea of reciprocity. So, you know, we tend to trust people that trust us. And there's a virtuous circle that if you, Tom, trust me, then I not only feel good about myself, I feel damn good about you, and I'm very keen to repay your trust. I think a lot of brands and businesses feel like, well, we just need to get our customers to trust us. Very few, in my experience, are having conversations like, in what ways can we show we trust our customers? I have a silly little example, but there's a bank in the UK called Barclays, and they used to, like all banks, when you went into the branch, by the teller, they would have a little pen on a chain. And there couldn't be any clearer symbol that bank did not trust its customers than chaining the bloody pens down. You know, and we're not talking about Mont Blancs here. We're talking about brands. If you go into a Barclays now, what you'll find is a little stack of there's a little dispenser with 30 or 40 little barrows in them that you're free to use and put back. And then on the odd occasion that somebody feels like nicking a Barclays barrow, which is branded to hell, so actually it's a piece of very cheap branded content. But it's, in a sense, I know that's a silly example, but
it's a great example.
Emblematic of what are you doing right now that shows that you don't trust your customers? And I'm sure there are many businesses where it would be commercial suicide to overextend trust. But all I'm saying to them is don't bother coming looking. Don't come to branding agencies or ad agencies and say, I want to be more trusted, if your basic business means you cannot trust your customers.
Oh, very so true.
Another example is loads of supermarkets insist that you put a pound coin or a euro into the trolley in order to get unlock the trolley. Well, I mean, I'm not going to nick the trolleys. I mean, I have no interest. And yet, if there's like so many policies sort of logistical and organizational dogma is around the tiny proportion of people who seek to get the better of a company or organization. By and large, most people want to do business with a business and in a sort of sense of mutual respect. So reciprocity for me is a really important part of that. And the final element of the jigsaw I talked about, dependability, shared agenda, reciprocity. The other one I think really interesting and slightly scary is the idea of sacrifice. So this for me is when there's nothing builds trust quite like somebody acting against their short-term interests in order to build a longer relationship. If I do something for you that is not in my interest, I don't know, I go out of my way to give you a lift home, it's out of my it takes me out of my normal journey. There's a sacrifice I'm making for you, and there's something magical happens when people act against their own interests in favor of other people's, and that works equally well at a business level. So an example I always love is when my eldest son was three, we went to buy some shoes at a shoe shop in London, and they measured his feet and said, I think it's Barks shoes, I think it's worth mentioning it, calling out the brand, because it's exactly the sort of thing they do. They measured his feet and said, he's not ready for a new pair of shoes, come back in 6 weeks' time. There's nothing like deferring a sale or staring a sale or an opportunity to rake in the cash and walking away from it, because in that moment you think, gosh, this brand or business really cares about me, it has my best interests at heart, they sacrifice a quick win for the long term, and as a result, you know, that buys my undying loyalty.
Brilliant example. I love your examples. And maybe we could make an attempt at a visionary strategic outlook, Richard. How do you think the conscious and trustworthy brands will have to behave in 10 years from now? What will be some of the added challenges, maybe also because of the social media and global connectivity developments, and which trends do you see right now that you think could become even larger in 5 to 10 years from now? Any ideas?
I think the thing that comes to mind most immediately is the idea of if the ability to see, for people to see inside my organization becomes ever more present, and their ability to share what I do, I think that we might find that superficial concepts of honesty and transparency, as I was saying earlier, become less rewarding, and this idea that what people are really looking for is brands and businesses that they can believe in, they have faith in, so they don't have to or seek to run the slide rule over every business every time they interact with them. So what we might see, perhaps, is a decline in the kind of TripAdvisor recommendation peer review idea, where we, every time we want to make research a purchase, we go and ask 1,000 people, relative strangers online, what they thought of it. If we can believe in a business and have faith that it shares our interests, it puts us first, then there's much less of a need to inspect the minutiae of their operation. That's arguably all brands were in the first place, a kind of a means by which you knew in the turn of the 19th to 20th century that if you bought a Heinz product, you didn't have to ask any more questions. You knew that it was a guarantee that it was unadulterated. And I think that's the real power of brands in a contemporary, connected consumer world.
Excellent. Well, that's a wonderful closing statement. Thank you so much, Richard, for your time and participation. Again, to mention the website, it's Saatchi.com, and his personal blog, which I can highly recommend, is at literate, literate, www.richardsmith.com. Thank you all for listening. What a great session with Richard. Make sure to join us for the next Enlightened Business session, and remember to connect to others on our Facebook page at Enlight Business, Enlight Business at Facebook. Thank you so much, Richard. As always, a true pleasure. Thank you so much for your time and your participation.
No worries, Tom. I really love that. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Enjoy your day.